evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. And again, if you're listening to this, we are working on our website, hope to have it up in the next week or so. So if you go to that website and you can't find us, we'll just give us a few weeks and we'll have it all. We got a brand new, spanking new website up that's going to be wonderful for readers and authors and all sorts of fun. So welcome to the show. And tonight I have a young adult romance author, Lisa. Hold on. What am I having? I'm having a little trouble here. Lost my studio. Okay, there we go. Lisa Brown Roberts is a young adult romance author who still hasn't recovered from the teenage trauma of nearly tweezing off both eyebrows and having to pencil them in for an entire school year. This and other angst-filled memories inspire her to write young adult books about navigating life's painful and funny dramas and falling in love along the way. Her almost forever home is Colorado, though she occasionally pines for the days when she lived within walking distance of the Pacific Ocean. Her house is full of books, boys, and several four-legged prima donnas, and lots of laughter. More about Lisa and her books can be found on her website, and you can click on the link there and go to her website, and we'll tell you the addresses and everything later on in the show. I'm going to bring her on live right now. Yeah, welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, Tabitha. Thanks for having me.
Sorry, I had a lovely little glitch here. I couldn't get my studio back up. I was like, oh, no, it's going to be horrible. It's okay. We got it. Good.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. Welcome from Colorado, which is, I would love to say that was my forever home. I got married in Colorado, Steamboat on Christmas Day, Silver Springs, on the gondola. It was beautiful.
Wow.
Nothing better. And so, yay, Colorado. I love Colorado.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live. I really don't have many complaints.
No, and you can just, if you want to go out and get some inspiration, you just walk outside. So, okay. Cool.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your journey to writing. You decided to write young adult versus writing adult. I know because I was a young adult librarian and I chose to be a young adult librarian for a reason, because I just didn't really feel like I was much more than a aged teenager.
Yeah.
Like
I definitely...
a teenager that was my 20th anniversary or something. But yeah, I completely understand, but yeah, let's share with everybody else why you chose young adult.
I definitely feel like I am still 17. The calendar, of course, tells me otherwise. But I think what's so fun about writing for teens and writing, becoming those characters in that time of life is it's such an exciting time and everything is new. You're experiencing things for the first time and you have so much passion and emotion and I love that stuff, and I love re-experiencing it when I write my books and hopefully connect with readers as well.
It's funny because, when people sit around and they go, oh, yeah, I remember this in high school. Oh, I wish I could go back there. And the first thing I always think is, hell no, I wouldn't go back there. Are you crazy? Those were the most drama-filled. I had never cried so much. The big hormone, horrible times, people picked on everybody, they were mean to each other, boyfriends broke hearts, you go through it all. But then you're like, wow, but that's some really good writing stuff, because think of all that.
yeah, for sure. There's a wealth of material there to explore and play with, and I like to think I can go back and maybe fix some of that too, and that's why I write really amazing heroes and girls who have it together way more than I ever did.
Sure, there you go. So it's a little therapy too. So, it never hurts when writing is a cathartic thing where you feel like you're fixing and cleansing and...
Right. Yeah, you can always dream.
And it's a really amazing thing for a librarian to find, to put a book in a hand of a kid and have them come back and tell you how much they identified with the characters. It's hard enough to get kids' attention, you know, because it's so divided, electronics and games and Pokemon Go and everything else out there, along with the regular teenage things that we dealt with, you know, before we had all those electronics.
It's true. It's amazing. I mean, I think it's such a gift of time that readers give to me when they sit down and read my books. And I love hearing from them when they feel that they really connected with the characters. And, you know, I think that can happen through any type of book. Most of my books are lighter, more romantic comedies. I just had one released last month that was Resisting the Rebel. And the heroine, Mandy, is she's quirky and just kind of marches to the beat of her own disco drummer. And a lot of people have written me or tweeted me or whatever to say how much they loved her and how inspiring she was, which was so cool, you know, to think that this was this light fun romance and yet people really related to her as a character and almost a role model. So that never gets old. That's really exciting.
Right. And when you're writing it, you're probably not even considering that she as a character is going to be someone looks up to in a way and says, oh, I want to be more like her. You hope they'll identify with them because
right.
You want to get that kind of response with anything you write fiction wise. But yeah, you don't really like go, okay, I want to make this girl so awesome that everybody thinks she's awesome. You know, when somebody says, oh, wow, yeah, she really inspired me, you go, wow, really?
Yeah, that's kind of a bonus, really, because my editor and I went back and forth somewhat on her character, whether or not she was too weird. And so we had some back and forth about that, and we finally came to some agreements. And it's ended up that it's worked out, so.
So tell me a little bit about tell me a little bit about that story in itself and how the character came about for you.
I am a huge fan of the movie Sky High. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Yes.
I have an obsessive love for that. Yeah, you know how that is. But what made me crazy was that, I'm blanking out on her name, Layla, the redhead, doesn't end up with War and Peace. And, you know, they had such amazing chemistry in that movie.
Oh, I know. They were failed.
Yeah, they were destined for each other. So I really wanted to kind of just write my own homage to that and change it up so that those two ended up together. So that's really what inspired that, the characters for sure. Yeah.
Well,
so,
that's neat. I never would have guessed that.
Oh, really? Well, you never know what inspires a strange writer creature. It could be anything.
Yeah, and the bad boy is always a great hero. I think the good girls in us that are always trying to do what our parents ask and da 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 always love the bad boy to be the hero.
And they're not really bad. I mean, of course they got that squishy middle. You just have to get to it, right? So
until they get to the adults, and then you never know. It's so squishy somewhere in there.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah. No, the tough exterior is a conflict in itself with that person, and I like that in The Bad Boy. It's like you see their conflict as skin, but then they've got more on the inside, you know, too, that's different conflicts going on. Because the bad boy thing, it creates so much conflict, and it's like, why are they like that? And then what are they doing that gets themselves in trouble all the time? And then it's a conflict because it's usually not a bad girl that likes the bad boy.
Of course not.
So, it's, you know, you were always drawn to that one. And because if they were a bad girl and a bad boy, you'd be like, yeah, so what, they deserve each other. Go on, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I love the bad boys, and the bad boy thing always works. What are some? This is probably a question I've never asked. What are some other tropes that you really like in romance?
I love friends to lovers. And I often want to say often, I have done Friends to Lovers and Enemies to Friends to Lovers.
Oh, yeah.
Because friendship's just really important for me to show that relationship really growing out of that. I think I've done that in all my books, one way or another. Even if they started as more antagonistic toward each other, they became
uh-huh.
friends before they became a couple. So that's probably the favorite for me is to this Friends to Lovers.
When you write an Enemies to Friends to Lovers, is it really, what's the easiest part? Is it coming up with a reason why they're thrust together into a situation together that they have to become the friends? Or is it, because, I mean, to me, that would be the hardest part of forming the part of the story.
Oh, yeah, a reason to put them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little tricky. I did one like that was Playing the Players, another one I did for Entangled Teen Crush. And I set that up, the two characters are thrown together in a nanny job over the summer, the guy and the girl. And and I had so much fun with that. Oh, I just had a blast writing that book, and readers have really loved that one too, which has been fun. But so, you know, I put them in a situation where they had to be together at least 3 days a week, and they had very opposing goals. You know, he's laid back and just wants to party, and she's super organized and driven and has no time for fun. And so, of course, you know, there's your natural conflict, and they
mm-hmm.
both learn from each other and fall in love and all that good stuff. But that was a fun one to play with. And that was nice because I kind of had a structure built in because they're babysitting these two crazy little kids. And I set it in Denver and around Colorado, and it was fun to go back and kind of visit some of the places I went as a kid on field trips and the baseball field and a lot of different scenes that I put in the book. It was kind of fun to just do that again too and put those scenes back in the book.
Well, that's neat, and that makes you you got your own free little trip down memory lane.
Yeah, I did. I set a scene in the Molly Brown House, which is this historical Denver house. Everybody's heard of, you know, the unthinkable Molly
unthinkable,
Brown.
Unthinkable, yeah.
Right. And I went down there and did the tour, and the whole time I'm picturing these two little kids wreaking havoc and escaping from their babysitters. And I talked to the docent afterwards and said, so here's what I'm doing. You know, is this feasible that they could get away and cause some trouble? And she said, oh, yeah, it happens all the time. Let me show you all the places the kids go. So that was, you know, that was really fun. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, and the good insider information. You're a good researcher.
Well, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
I have to do some research I will tell you about that I'm nervous about.
Ooh.
For the book I'm working on now. I decided to make the hero a pilot because teenagers can get their licenses when they're 16. And so that means that I have to go up in a plane, a small plane.
A little plane.
Which
Yeah,
which I've done before. And the last time I did that, my husband and I were in Mexico flying over from Cozumel over to Chichen Itza.
Uh-huh.
To see the Mayan ruins, and we were in this horrific thunderstorm, and oh my God, I was just terrified, absolutely terrified, and sure we were going to die. And said, I will never ever get in one of those planes again. It was this little yellow plane called Aero Banana.
Oh my God.
It was very cute. Very cute little plane. But I was so scared. And now I just actually contacted a pilot who got his license when he was a teenager, and I'm going to go up with him, and hopefully I won't pass out or have to use the barf bag or anything like that. We'll see.
Just take it easy on me, dude. Oh, you're brave, because I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, nope. Next time.
Yeah. I know.
Let's make him a race car driver. I could rather do that.
Yeah, we'll see. I just am going to cross my fingers and say my prayers and hope. I'm sure it'll be fine. And
oh, gosh, people do it every day. Yeah,
right,
people do it every day. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's funny how our minds are, like, preset for certain things. I know there's people that don't have fears of things like that. And I don't know how they've managed to not, because there's so much media and movies and everything else that you know, prejudice you against things. And
right.
For me, it's flying as one of them. And so I've got the little bit, I'm not horribly fearful. My mother now, only if she absolutely has to. But when you get out, I get on there and I start to get comfortable, and then there's turbulence. It freaks me out. It's like, I let my guard down. Oh my gosh. So,
yeah.
Do it again.
I know. That's how I am too. So we'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll just go up and come right back down, and I'll say, okay, that's it.
I'm done.
That's all I needed.
Well, you never know. It might be something, it might be a really great experience. So I hope for you it is. I hope it's wonderful and you get a great view of everything. And yeah, I mean, she has a view of Colorado. I'm not going to say mountains because that would freak you out. But
right.
View of Colorado from there. That would be awesome. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Tell me a little bit about how you started writing. Were you a writer as a, you know, a child, young, before preteen? Did you like to write? Did you read a lot?
Yes, I definitely was that kid who, you know, started it. Second grade was when I decided to be a writer. I had this amazing teacher. Her name was Kathy Scott, and she had a shoebox full of story ideas in her classroom, and we were supposed to write little stories. We all had story notebooks. And I would just, that was my favorite thing to do. I'd go get all the cards out of there and write all these stories. And one day she said,
oh, wow.
You know, Lisa, you can make your own stories now. You don't need to go to the box anymore. And that was, you know, it's one of those fun memories I have that kind of crystallized for me. It's like, you know, that's what I always wanted to do. It took me a long time to get to the point of publication. Because of my own self-doubt and worries about putting my work out there and all that. But I'm very excited and grateful to be here now, that's for sure.
That's really neat that she did that. Not a lot of teachers have the time anymore to create that kind of environment that is conducive and encourages creative writing anyway, because so they have so many reasons to have purposeful writing that creative writing kind of takes a back seat to it all now. So that's a really great thing. And I imagine there were a lot of teachers like that back in the day before they were so confined by what they have to do to teach some test and everything else. But that's great, because she created a writer out of you. I mean,
she really did. She
just
did,
by giving
sure.
you little tools. So that's just awesome. I wish they could go put that kind of emphasis back on being, I mean, everybody else is allowed to be creative, but writing has to be a persuasive essay or a, you know, this,
right.
or this expository or this. And there's not enough in any school, except for when you get into college, to persuade people. But I think if you aren't already leaning that way, you know, I'm not saying that you want to be a writer, but you have the story making ability, storytelling ability kind of going on in your brain all the time. But it'd be hard to become a writer later in later days without that kind of the enjoyment of a story.
Right. I think that's an interesting point, because it was certainly the love that was inspired in a very young age for me. And I don't know, what would have happened if I didn't get to try that out until I was a lot older. I don't know.
So
fortunately, I don't have to know.
Right. So you say it took you a while to get to publishing, but when did you decide you were going to seriously sit down and I'm going to write this book that's been in my head and I've got to get it out?
So my first book, How Not to Fall in Love, 2011 was the year that I decided to just really get off my duff and do it. I had been in a really wonderful critique group of my friends called the Wild Writers. I joined that group in 2004, And it was just a really nurturing, great, supportive group of folks. But at the same time, I was going through a lot of really tough personal stuff in my own life. My husband was out of work for a couple of years, and we lost our house, and really went through that really incredibly difficult time of sort of having everything and losing it all and trying to start over. And a lot of that I channeled into that first book. If anybody's read that, they will say, oh, that's where that comes from. So it was very cathartic for me, but it was also, you know, I think when you go through these life-changing events, you can either be crushed by them or you can rise up. And I decided, you know, I have to do this. I don't want to look back someday and say, I never pursued my dream. And so I got serious, and I work full time. I've always done that, and, you know, finally made the commitment to find the time to write and get up early every day and work at night and on the weekends or whenever I had to make that happen. And so that was when I really decided to finally do the thing I always said I wanted to do since I was 7 years old.
And life has a way of getting in the way. It happens to all of us, apparently. But, it's good that you were able to channel and make something out of that moment instead of, some of us letting it get, like me, letting it get to me and sitting writing in the back burner for a whole year. But that's okay.
And I did for a long time. I mean, I was just kind of keeping my head above water for a lot of years when we went through that. But in a lot of ways, my critique group kept me going because I would go every month to the meetings, even though I wasn't writing and I wasn't bringing anything. I was still learning from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a lifeline for me to this dream that I was just not going to give up. So
that's great. And it is important to have, I think, a support system. Even if you're not part of a bigger group, you may maybe have a support system at home. But I know that I'm very inspired just watching my Romance Writers of America group, my RWA group. Just watching everyone else succeed, it makes me want to go home and write every month when I go to the meetings. And, you know, of course I don't, but it makes me want to. And but there's a way, you know, if there was, I know that a lot of people get more out of that. Well, I have a crazy 5-year-old. There's no way I'm going to write right now.
And that's hard too. I mean, honestly, because I had a little one at that point in my life too, and it was really hard. And now my son is teen, and you know, he's doing his own thing, and that makes it easier for sure.
Yeah, I think it'll be better once he's way more independent and not such a problem. Not under my feet 24 hours a day. So,
right.
He's a mess. But I can totally understand where it would, you know, and then those types of things don't help your confidence either. So once you got busy and got serious about the book and got it written, obviously you had a great critique group to help you polish it and get it ready. Did you submit directly to publishers, or did you find an agent? How did you work that process?
I was doing both. I was querying agents, and at the same time I was investigating publishers who took unagented submissions, and you know, there aren't that many of those around. But I had started hearing about Entangled and reading about them, and I bought, I think, every YA book they had out at the time. and I read, Summer, I Became a Nerd by Leah Ray Miller, which is great. And Rachel Harris's books, My 16th, Sweet 16th. Oh, I'm terrible. Sorry,
yeah.
Rachel, you won't come out. and I thought, wow, Entangled is doing some really great stuff in YA, and I can submit to them without an agent. So I also sent that first book into them. Then at the same time, I entered a local contest held by the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers called the Colorado Gold Contest. They have every year for unpublished writers. And everything kind of just came together in this, like, fall of 2013, I guess. I finaled in that contest, and then I heard from Entangled that they were interested in my manuscript. And I had a couple agents who I met at the conference express interest, and it was like the switch kind of went off, and it was, you know, very exciting. And it's kind of been full steam ahead since then.
That's
I never
awesome.
Would have guessed that I'd have four books out so quickly, but it's been really fun and tiring and stressful, but mostly a lot of fun.
Yeah, that first one, you know, you write it, you polish it, you get it all ready, and, you know, you've taken all this time. But then,
right.
You know, when you sell a book, then all of a sudden you start getting deadlines. And it's like, wait a minute,
yeah.
I had all this time.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing. I wake up at 3 in the morning going, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do this? So far, it's happened, but...
you got it done so far. So you're still working full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this on the kudos
yeah,
to you.
It's crazy. I like my job. I work in higher ed, and I've got supportive coworkers, and you know, I enjoy my job. But someday, I hope I'm writing full time, as I think every writer probably does.
Right.
But
yeah.
For now, it's kind of what I need to do, and I get up super early. I'm usually up between 4:30 and 5, and I make my pot of coffee and sit down, and nobody's up. It's quiet. I turn on my playlist, and I usually get in a good 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours before I go to work.
Wow.
So
that's really dedicated.
It's crazy.
I would never give up sleep for such things. So.
Yeah. You know, I can go for quite a while, and then all of a sudden my body is just like, okay, you need to just stop and sleep for a few days. And so then I'll...
Yeah.
Give myself a break and just get up at like 6:30 so I'm sleeping in.
Yeah, all right. 2 more hours is a big when you, yeah, well, it's 4:30 just sounds so early to me because we do late bedtimes around here because
yeah.
I don't, you know, I homeschool my 14-year-old daughter and my husband didn't get home till 8 o'clock at night. So everything's later here. So,
right.
So when you said 4:30, my body went, oh.
I know. It was hard at first, but it's I don't know. I think I'm more of a natural morning person, and it's gotten easier. So even if I don't want to wake up early now, I do.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's maybe just because you're doing something that you love and
that's
it makes
true.
A huge difference. You know, if you're doing something you didn't want to do, like having to go run a mile or something terrible in the morning.
I was just going to say,
you're like, no,
not to have to go work out. Nope. Won't do it for that. I should, but
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. I totally understand. Let's see. It is, we're about halfway. So I'm going to put the phone number out. If anybody wants to call in, please call in at 347-633-9609, and you can speak to Lisa, and just like that, poof, somebody appeared. So that's awesome.
It's magic.
So are you ready to take callers?
Sure.
Okay, let's start with Mama here. Hi, welcome to the library, and you're live with Lisa Brown Roberts.
Hi, I'm so glad to be calling in. Lisa, this is Katie, and I am so thrilled to be talking with you. I love your books. They are so fantastic. And I was wondering, do you have a favorite of your main character guys? Because it's really hard for me to decide which one I like the best. So do you have an opinion on which one is your favorite?
Oh, hi, Katie. Thanks for calling. I think when I'm writing the book, that is my favorite, you know, because I make myself fall in love with these guys when I write the book. So whenever I'm writing them, that's who I love the most. I really, really love Dallas, who's in The Replacement Crush, which is coming out next week. He might be my favorite because he's smart and funny and nerdy and hot and just, you know, he was a lot of fun to write. So I'm going to go with Dallas right now.
I love Dallas. I actually had the opportunity to read an ARC version of the book, and it was so good. And I love that you pull all of your nerdy things into this book. So let me ask, are you an actual nerd, or are you just doing this for our benefit?
Okay, I love you. I'm pretty nerdy. I would not say I'm like hardcore nerd where I could go to Comic-Con and know every episode number of Star Trek, but I will say that one of the highlights of my nerd life was a couple years at Comic-Con in Denver. They had the whole cast of Star Trek Next Generation, which is my favorite of the series. They had all of them there for an interview, which I paid extra money to go to, and William Shatner interviewed them, which was even better because he'd been drinking, so he was hilarious. And it was, oh my God, it was so much fun. I totally dorked out. So yeah, I guess I'm a nerd.
Good answer.
That sounds like so much fun.
That's hilarious.
Now, Lisa, one last thing I want to ask you, Lisa. I know that you are one of those people that likes to dress up for these kind of things, and I've seen some of your costumes before. But I just wanted to know, do you have a favorite costume for all of this stuff?
Well, funny you should ask. I did just order a red Star Trek uniform because I'm going to wear that at my book signing. And, I'm excited about that. My son, okay, so here's the funny thing about my book signing. I'm doing it at our local Barnes & Noble, and we're also doing it as a fundraiser for my son's high school, Thomas Jefferson High School in Denver. Woo, go Spartans! for their choir, which my son is a member of the choir. And so they're coming to sing, and I ordered a stand-up life-size Spock to have at the signing so people can take their picture with Spock. I'm going to wear my Star Trek dress and possibly Spock ears, because if you have read the book, which Katie has, you know why I would do that.
It's going to fit so perfectly. I'm so excited to see all these pictures.
Yeah. So I will say right now Star Trek is going to be my favorite costume.
Okay.
That's so awesome.
Well, thanks for calling in, Katie.
Thank you so much for letting me call in. This has been so much fun. Lisa, love you.
Thanks. Love you too. Bye.
Bye.
That was funny.
Yes, it was. Katie's great. She's a very amazing, supportive fan.
That's awesome. That's good. It's very good to have that, and I did notice that today, and was going to ask you, you seem to have a really good fan base or support system with other authors, because I've never seen my show retweeted that many times. It was really awesome. I was like, wow, I'm expecting like a million people to listen tonight, because I've never seen it on Twitter that much in my life.
That's fun. I asked, you know, there's the YA branch of RWA, which I think you're part of too.
Yes.
And so I put out a note there and asked them to tweet it, and some other friends and people from my literary agency. And, you know, I love Twitter because it's, hey guys, help a girl out. And they all did. So that was fun.
Oh, and you know why? Because Twitter's easy. It's easy to do that. Here's this. Copy, paste, post, it's done. They don't have to spend a lot of time. They don't have to copy HTML and post it somewhere and go through all this finagling. I was about to say another word. Farting around with the blog like I have to.
Right.
The other and, you know, that becomes time consuming and people don't have that time, but they can tweet something real fast and they can share it on Facebook if you get it ready and tell them, share this. So that's why social media is so powerful. And yeah, that was some really cool stuff. I've never seen it tweeted that much. So I was like, yeah, go Lisa.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, it was.
And
that
just kind of leads me into another thing. It's being an author is such a solo craft. And, you know, you spend a lot of time alone writing in solitude. And so it's really important to have a group of people who understand where you're coming from to, you know, kind of share at least the joys and the downfalls and all of that. And I'm sure you had that with your critique group, which is why you kept going. But now it's like, now that we have these groups, the RWA groups, like the Yarwa and just probably your Entangled Line, other authors that you know, right, and you're friendly with. Why, I don't know, but I think that romance authors of all levels are some of the most supportive people I've ever seen. I used to think that just about the children's lit community, but I've seen it way over an abundance with romance. It's awesome.
I think so too. I mean, I started out with SCBWI. That's actually where I met my first critique group that I mentioned. And those folks are, you know, wonderful. But then I kind of gravitated more to romance since I really am a romance writer more than anything, I think, and really wanted to pursue that. And that it's just the most welcoming, supportive group of folks. I love it, you know, and I love going to the National RWA Conference. It's so much fun. And last April, I went to my first RT Book Lovers convention in Vegas.
Of course,
and that
was in Vegas, so I'm sure it was.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was so tired, but it was so much fun. I mean, it was just, you know, party after party and games and cover models and, you know, squeeing all the time when you're walking forward. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I can't wait to go back. I'm hoping to go again this year in Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to go too. And Atlanta's a drivable distance, so I can maybe do that.
Yeah.
You
won't regret it.
No. That I've heard, but I can't even imagine how. I mean, people tell me stories, and I'm just like, you know, keep it in Vegas because I'm just crazy. Crazy stuff happening with cover models and whatnot. And yeah, okay. So do you do the signing when you do the RWA and the RT? Did you do the YA day?
I did. Yeah, I got to do both of those, and that was really fun. You know, those were major career highlights for me to sign at RWA and then at RT as well. And my publisher did a lot of really fun things with at RT with parties and Tangle did. We had Candy and Spoons, which is this crazy game with decks of cards with book covers on it and candy, and it got really wild and crazy. People get super intense trying to win those free books. So that was a ton of fun. And then all the YA parties were really fun. We did a YA sleepover. Wasn't really a sleepover, mm-hmm. but I think we started around 10 and went till about 1 in the morning, and we wore pajamas and
It was fun.
Yeah, it was just a whole lot of fun.
Well, that's when the strong relationships get built, when you can have fun with people. So those are important for writers, I think, across the board. We've got another caller.
Okay.
Hi, you're live on The Librarian and Lisa Brown Roberts.
Hi, my name is Jennifer, and I'm a middle school language arts teacher, and I love Lisa's books. And I was wondering, Lisa, if you can tell me if The Replacement Crush would be good for my classroom, or what do you think would be – I'm sorry if you might have already talked about this, but I was thinking about having it in my classroom library. If you could just talk to me a little bit about that, I'd be psyched.
Well, thanks for calling, Jennifer. I think it would be fine. I would say when people ask me – you know, sometimes to rate books, I would say it's PG-13. There's maybe a little bit
perfect.
Of swearing. Yeah, there's kissing. So the boys won't want to read it, but.
No. Go ahead.
It is a romance.
Cool. Half my students are girls.
Yeah. Well, actually, I just saw recently my review from School Library Journal, and I believe it was a middle school librarian who reviewed it and said she recommended it for her shelf. So.
Oh, perfect.
Thumbs up. Right?
Great. Well, I'll talk to the librarian at my school too then, because we always need new books in the big library for the kids to check out as well as in our classrooms. So that's exciting. Well, congratulations on your upcoming book release, Lisa.
Thank you, Jen. Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Have a great rest of your night.
You too.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
That was one of the biggest questions that I always, I mean, almost always got at the library when I was a young adult librarian. People coming up and saying, my daughter is 12, can she read this? And I'm like, don't make me read a book. I'm not going to.
Right.
It's not my job.
Really,
you know.
It's hard.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. And I would basically do the same thing. I would say, I would try to give them some kind of social reference. And I would say, if you will let your kid watch this movie, then this is probably okay. You know?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. But when I first started as a librarian was during the Twilight, humongous Twilight.
Right.
I think the third book came out the first year I was a librarian, and you know, of course, we were waiting on the fourth book. And then the movie came was coming out, too. So I had moms who wanted to read it, non-moms, adults who wanted to read it. I had teenagers reading it. And then I had, oh, well, my daughter's 10, but she's a really advanced reader. And I'm like, well, you know, if you're looking for really awesome writing, this is not one of them. So it's not a problem there. But then I would just try to explain to them. I'm like, look, one's probably okay. There's sexual tension, but they probably won't even get it, you know, because they're 10. They're not going to get it. They're not going to understand that. Number two gets a little more, but it's still just sexual tension mostly. And they're probably not going to get it, but it's kind of scary, but you know, whatever. I said, but once they get to three, they're invested. And four, I wouldn't let my 12-year-old read, you know. And I said, well, because they have sex, but they're married, and they're supposed to have sex, you know.
Right.
So it was like, so I have to explain this thing. I'm like, if you let your 10-year-old read this, they're going to want to read all the way through the fourth book because it's a series, and it ends in a cliffhanger, and they want to keep going. But I'm telling you, when they get to the fourth book, it's in your face, you know, pillow biting, breaking beds, the whole bit. She's pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think at that point, parents, it's like, well, you know what I recommend is, well, maybe, you know, you want to read it first.
Yeah. And that's what I tell them.
And, you know.
And then they're like, I don't want to read this crap. And I'm like, well, then don't want your kids to read it. You know, I'm like, oh my God, come on. But we had that and we couldn't, we had parents come in all the time who wanted us to rate books. You know, is this more for the middle schooler and this is more for the older teen, like the, you know, junior, senior. I'm like, we can't do that. We can't do that because some parent will come in that they have a senior and say their kid shouldn't be reading this crap. So what do you want me to do?
So
it was really, really hard.
It's got to be very challenging for librarians because everybody has different opinions and feel strongly about censorship or lack thereof.
Yeah. Well, and schools just have
to
be so careful because they're spending the community's money. So they have to be careful what they put on their shelves. And I understand that because, you know, you don't want to put anything in that's going to, but then you've got the librarians who go so far the other way that they get everything that they know is going to fight and they're going to, you know, just to put up a big fight. And so I think there's going to be some kind of happy medium in the world. if you don't want to have it at the school library, it should be the public library for sure. Free access to all and, you know, all that stuff. So we would have people come and tell us, you know, they want to challenge this book. And I'm like, this isn't a school library. You know,
oh, you mean when you were at the public library?
Yeah, I was like, this isn't a school library. You don't.
Yeah.
We're not making your kids read anything. You brought them here. So it was just very strange. So a lot goes into I'm trying to write a contemporary young adult and trying to figure out where I'm going to draw those lines with the sexuality and the language. Cause you know, you put in the sporadic, you know, bad word here or there, it's not an issue. But I've read some that, you know, it's gratuitous. It's just like, I don't know what kind of point you're trying to make, but for that reason alone, this book is not going to be on the shelf at a public school, you know, or a private school for that matter. But it just, it's kind of a, YA has just got these fine lines, and it just, it's kind of confusing as a writer, I think. Definitely confusing as a librarian, like she was saying, and a teacher. So it's hard.
Yeah, I imagine so.
But yeah, I mean, if the story is good enough, you're not going to know. Because I mean, they if the story is a good story, you read through those bad words, and they're well placed and they're meaningful, and they go, you go past them. You know, I mean, look at the Vault and our stars. There's few in there. People just, they drink champagne. You know, they had sex, but people that was on every middle school shelf.
Right. So, right. Well, and I just think we have to be realistic as writers too. I mean, and there's every experience of kids. There's kids who don't drink at all or do anything, and there are kids who are mm-hmm. doing everything. And I think each author, you know, figures out what story they're telling and tries to be authentic to their characters. But then, as you say, then there's, you know, you have to look at what that might mean for where your books are shelved or not.
Right. Right. Understood. It's a wicked, wicked world we live in.
Yeah, I just like to write kissing scenes.
Yes. And you know what? I have found that I prefer to write a good kissing scene to an adult love scene. Because I'm afraid I'm going to screw it up. But I can write a really authentic kissing scene because I got that down, you know?
You know, so, good kissing is a very important skill. And,
absolutely.
You know,
and I know after 40-something years that I've got that one down. So.
Yeah.
Well, we're about 11 minutes from the end of the show. Okay. And we have another caller. Let's get the caller. We've got a little time.
All right.
Hi. Welcome to the library.
Hi.
And you're live with Lisa Brown Roberts.
Hi.
Hello.
What's your name?
My name's Alexis, and I was drawing your fan art for The Replacement Crush.
Hey, Alexis, thanks for calling. You're the best. Alexis has drawn me amazing fan art. If you guys go look at my Instagram account, you can see it, and she's so talented.
I love fan art. I'm like a fan of fan art. Because it's so cool to see other people's interpretation of your characters and scenes, and it's just neat.
It is, and it's. I feel so honored that you took the time to draw Dallas, and she drew some characters from my book, Playing the Player, too. She did a great scene with Slade and Trina, which is really fun. So
you've already read the Replacement Crush?
Yeah, like a couple weeks ago.
Awesome. So, give us a 3-word description of Dallas.
Cute, smart, and I don't know.
Cute and smart is good.
Cute and smart, okay.
Right.
Okay, those are good. Those are good words. Well, I'm so glad that you called in and you got to talk to her. Did you have anything you wanted to ask her since you've got her here online?
Is there anything that we should know about Dallas that wasn't mentioned in the book? Oh, gosh, that's such a good question. You know, he, like I was saying, I think he's probably my favorite hero so far. You know, there's stuff I should say, but it might be spoilery. I'm thinking what I might do is write, do a fun, like, free short story around Christmas time with some more from Dallas and Vivian. But I think you should know that he is every bit as awesome as he is in the book. And you know what else you should know is he is going to get probably going to get another tattoo, but I didn't put that in the book. So.
Ooh. That's more fan art later.
Yeah. So maybe I'll tell you what it is, Alexis, and have you draw it. Okay.
Hey, that's a good deal. That's a really good
Thanks
deal. That'll be get some good preview for the sorority.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in. It's really it's believe me, Lisa's like super super excited to hear from people that she meets online. So it's just a cool thing. It's a neat thing that you guys got to talk. See.
Yes, right. It's great. I love talking to fans, so thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye bye. Cute. Okay. I love fan art. I do. I love it. I love to go on DeviantArt and look at people's fan art. It's just so neat. Okay, so we're getting down to the wire, but I want to make sure that everybody knows what you're working on next.
Well, as I said, the hero is a pilot. so it's another YA contemporary romance. I would say sort of loosely inspired by Pride and Prejudice a little bit. I think that's all I'll say about that.
Okay.
I'm having a lot
Do
of
fun have-
with it, but it's... Oh, go ahead.
Well, The Replacement Crush comes out, you said, next week?
Yeah, on Tuesday.
Okay. And then do you have any other books coming out for the rest of 2016?
Not for 2016, but I'm also working on some other crush projects for Entangled as well,
okay.
which I'm having a lot of fun with those. I really enjoy doing the shorter category teen romances.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's at first I was overwhelmed because I write long.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found that it's challenging to write shorter, and I actually really enjoy it. So I'm excited to be doing a few more of those for Entangled as well.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to a whole lot more from you then. And more fan art, because that's cool.
Yeah. It's the best. It's very, very exciting to have that pop up. It's like, oh, and I'm amazed because I am a stick figure person myself.
Yeah, yeah,
so.
Me too. That's why that's why it's so cool to me. It's just like, you can visualize and actually put it on paper. I can visualize it, and then it looks like, what did you just draw? You know?
Yeah.
Is that a pizza? No, it's a guy. So, yeah. So tell all your books can be found at all the major outlets, Amazon,
yeah.
Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes,
iBooks, all
of them. All
those places.
Okay.
Yes.
And in the retail outlets as well. The
yes.
What do they call them now? Concrete.
Brick and mortar.
So, brick and mortar. Yeah, like concrete something or the other.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that always messes up those things. and then let everybody know what all your where you are on social media, and your website is just lisabrownroberts.com.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And Twitter is at lbrownroberts, and I think Instagram is just lisabrownroberts. I'm sure if you put that in, you'll find me. I think that's
yeah. I think you can search it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we look forward to if you spring a surprise story for around Christmas on the folks who are already in love with Dallas. I'm sure they'll be thrilled.
yeah,
in case,
I thought, you know, I always end up with deleted scenes too, which are fun. So I probably should
yeah.
look at those too.
Yeah, so that would be neat. Well, congratulations, and we look forward to release day next week and all that you have to offer coming up 2017 too. Thanks
Great.
For being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tabitha.
I'm glad we were able to get you on. I love having my young adult authors on here. I have more fun, I think, because I'm more comfortable there. So.
Well, thanks.
All right. Thanks again for being on, and good night in Colorado. Enjoy it for the rest of us.
Oh, I will. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. And thanks, everybody, for listening in. You can find me on Facebook as at the Librarian on Authors on the Air. I can't talk. I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian_. And this podcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at www.authorsontheair.com. And again, a little note there, if you go there right now, our website's under construction, so give me about a week and I'll have it up and it'll be beautiful and brand spanking new. And anywhere else on the social media universe, you can find all of us. Thanks to Authors on the Air for letting me share my passion for romance and sharing the hottest authors in young adult, new adult, and adult romance with all of you. Thanks to my gorgeous husband in the next room with my little monster. And I will see the rest of you next Thursday right here at 9 p.m. Eastern on The Librarian. Sweet dreams.